Before you sit down, I'm just going to read this morning's passage, which is Mark chapter 2, verse 23 through 28. It says this: One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" He answered, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar, the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat, and he also gave some to his companions. Then he said to him, 'The Sabbath was made for the man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath.'" You may be seated.
Well, good morning, everyone. Oh, good response. You must have had your coffee. It's good. Well, it's so good to be with you. Thanks, PK. My name is David. I'm one of the pastors here, and just a privilege to be with you, whether you're in the room or online. Man, we're just so glad you're here. We are jumping into our text right away. The title of today's teaching is "The Burden Can Be Light." Turn to your neighbor and tell them the burden can be light. Why don't you? The burden can be light. The burden can be light. Now, why do we need to hear that today? Why do I emphasize that right off the top? It's because we live in a culture that celebrates productivity, rewards busyness, and fills every moment with noise and activity, and it's left us exhausted. It's left us exhausted. That's why we need to hear those words, "The burden can be light." See, as a culture, we are living at such a frantic and frenetic pace. We have too little margin and too much overstimulation, and the effect is that it's hollowing us out from the inside. And we come in here on a Sunday, and we are carrying the weight of the world on our shoulders. And sometimes we need to be reminded that it doesn't have to be this way, that we don't need to buy into the heavy burdens that the culture and the people around you are laying upon you, that the burden does not have to be heavy. It can actually be light. Amen. And today I want to show you how, from this story, from the life of Jesus. And so if you haven't already, grab your Bible and get to Mark 2. We're going to start reading in verse 23. It says this: One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" Now, this is the fourth time in chapter 2 where either a religious group or a group of people have confronted Jesus with a question about what he's doing and why. First, they confronted him about, "Why are you forgiving someone's sins? That's something that God alone can do. So why are you doing that?" Then they confront Jesus about the people he's eating dinner with and celebrating with. Then they confront him about the spiritual practice of fasting. And in this story, they confront him about the Sabbath. They say, "Why are your disciples doing what they shouldn't be doing on the Sabbath?" The Sabbath is a 24-hour period in Jewish culture from sunset on Friday to sunset on Saturday. It was a day where Israel ceased from work, a day where they delighted in God and the world God had made. And this day, this 24-hour sacred holy day called the Sabbath, is the contested ground in our passage. As Jesus continues to reshape the religious systems of his day around himself and around the new way of the kingdom of God. Remember, Jesus has come and he has proclaimed good news. He's proclaimed the good news of God, that the rule and reign of God has come near in my person. that the rule and reign of God is breaking into the present moment, and it can be experienced by those who repent and believe in the good news. Jesus is not just proclaiming this message, he's embodying this message, he's demonstrating this message and this reality that something new is happening, and it's around him and this new way of the kingdom. This is the contested ground as the old ways rub up against the new way found in Jesus. Now, as we begin, take note of two things in verses 23 and 24. The first is that the debate about the Sabbath happens on the Sabbath. So they're actually living in this sacred and holy day when this debate breaks out. It says one Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields. And so we're in the Sabbath, this sacred time of the week, and the debate about the Sabbath is happening. And what we need to know is that the Sabbath was the most important day of the Jewish week. It was not just any other day. It wasn't just like it was a normal day. It was different business. They saw the Sabbath as holy and sacred, a day that was foundational to who they were as a people. And for centuries, they had faithfully kept this 24-hour period where they rested from work to delight in God and the world that he had made. Now, to understand this, we need to do a little bit of a history lesson. So we're going to flip all the way back to the part of the Bible before Jesus, to the book of Exodus, one of the Old Testament books. Now, if you remember, the Exodus is about God rescuing his enslaved people and bringing them into a life with him. Israel had been in slavery for 400 years. Generation after generation after generation of this people had experienced slavery and were under the crushing burden of being enslaved. And after 400 years, one of the generations decided, we are not going to take this anymore. We're not satisfied with the status quo. And they get on their knees and they start crying out to God. It says they groaned out to God in their slavery. And God hears their prayers, and he responds. He comes down and reveals himself in a burning bush to a man named Moses. Says, Moses, I am going to use you, and through you, I am going to rescue my people out of slavery into a life with me in a land that I will give them called the Promised Land. And then God comes down and he rescues his people. He leads them through the Red Sea into a life of freedom from slavery with him. And then at a mountain, Mount Sinai in Exodus 19, God says, you are my treasured possession, Israel. Out of all the nations in the world, I choose you. You are my people. I've set my heart on you. I'm entering into a covenant relationship with you. And then he gives his rescued people a set of instructions to define who they are and how to live in relationship with him and in relationship with one another. And we know that as the Ten Commandments, and you can see them on the screen behind me. Those are the Ten Commandments. The first four are vertical based. They are oriented to God and his worship. He says, Israel, these are the things that I need you to do, to pay attention to build into your life as a new nation. And then the rest of the commandments are horizontal in nature. They're about how Israel was supposed to relate to one another. And so God had given this as its like foundational kind of teaching about this is what it means to be my people who worship me and live in community with one another. And it's the fourth commandment that matters to us. And I'm going to read it. And it's fascinating because it's the longest commandment of them all. And it was almost like God knew that this one was so important that he wanted to give more instructions and understanding to his people because maybe they wouldn't grasp it right away. And so God says these words to his people. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. So this is a day dedicated to God. Okay, it's a special day. It's a holy day. It's sacred. It's dedicated to the person of Yahweh. It's important. On that day you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. And here's the reason why, God says. This is why you want to dedicate this day to me. This is why you want to practice the Sabbath. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So God's message to his people is, I want you to work and to labor for 6 days. And then on the seventh day, I want you to step off the treadmill and I want you to take a break. I want you to cease working. I want you to rest and take a breather. Take this day as a gift. Slow down. Dedicate this day to me. Be with me. Delight in me. Worship me and enjoy the world I made. Now hear me. Work is good and rest is good. Both are good. From the very beginning, God builds work into the destiny and the purpose of humanity. You can see that in Genesis chapter 1. And so there's beauty in work and there's beauty in rest. And God's message is, you need to set aside 1 day a week for me. Do not work. I love Psalm 46:10. Be still and know that I'm God. Now let me ask you, this week, were you still and did you set aside time to know God? Think about your week. Do an audit as you sit there. Did you set aside time this week, intentional time, where the TV was turned off, your phone was put away, where you didn't scroll social media, where your notifications were turned off and weren't bothering you and drawing your attention back to the phone? Did you set aside time to have no music and no noise? Did you set aside time where there was nobody around and you were able to be still and slow in the presence of the living God and know that he is God and you are not? Did you do that this week? See, what I want us to see is that the Sabbath is more than just a command from God. It's a sacred rhythm that God has given to his people for their good. And that God has actually built this sacred rhythm of work and rest into the very fabric of the world that he created. We see this in the first book of the Bible, Genesis chapter 2. It says, thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy because on it, he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. So the story of God's activity in the world begins with God working and then it ends with God resting. God's creating the trees, the stars, the mountains, the animals, night and day. He's putting the water in place. He's creating humanity. God spends 6 days working and creating, and then he finishes his work, and what does he do? Keeps working, right? No, he rests. Now, God doesn't need to rest. God doesn't get tired out. He doesn't get weary. He never sleeps. But this God ceases from work on the seventh day to enjoy the very good world that he had made. Cool, right? Well, maybe that's not so cool, but I think it's important. All right? It's very important. When God rests after 6 days of working, he built a rhythm of work and rest into the created order. And when he formed a ragtag bunch of ex-slaves into his treasure possession, he built that into who they were as a people, foundational to their identity and foundational to the rhythms of the way they were supposed to live in the world. And he said, you are my people. I've rescued you. I've saved you out of a life of freedom into a life with me, and you are to live differently than every other nation in the world. You are not slaves any longer, just destined to work yourself to the bone. You are my people, and my people have a rhythm of work, and they have a rhythm of rest. Work for 6 days, rest for one. This 1 day was so foundational to the identity of God's people. It shaped their life, their rhythm, and their identity for centuries. So when we come to this encounter between Jesus and this religious group called the Pharisees, we are not just talking about any other day. We are talking about a day that was one of the two defining factors of God's people in the world. One, the Sabbath. The second was circumcision. But by Jesus' day, the original goodness had become obscured by a list of do's and don'ts, by rules. Goodness had been replaced by what you do and what you don't do. And we see this in this encounter with the question they ask Jesus: why are they, the disciples, doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? You circle that word unlawful. That's the concern. The Pharisees are concerned about what the disciples are doing and what they shouldn't be doing. Unlawful means what is permissible or not permissible or allowed according to rule or custom. Their concern is that the disciples are breaking the rules that were put in place. Now, their intent was good. Can I just say that? The Pharisees' intent was good. They wanted the Sabbath to be kept holy. They wanted people to follow God's commands. Their heart was good. Their intention was good. But the problem was is that they had taken what's called these oral traditions. Oral traditions. They had taken those traditions that had been passed down from generation to generation, and they had elevated them to equal and worth to the law of God. So there was the law of God, which had a divine origin. It was what God had given his people. It wasn't human teaching. It was from God. The God who rescued his people gives them a way to live. That was the Mosaic law. And the oral tradition was these collection of human laws that were passed from generation to generation. So human origin. God's law said, work 6 days and take a rest from work on the seventh. The oral tradition had come up with 39 different categories for what constituted rest and what constituted work on the Sabbath. Here's an example. Plowing, reaping, hunting, and butchering an animal were all considered work. Cool. But so was loosening or tying knots. So was sewing more than one stitch or writing more than one letter. That was considered work too. And so they had come up with these lists of rules and categories that would define what was work and what would break the Sabbath in order to keep the Sabbath. And the rabbis had tried to come up with every possible scenario that might constitute work so that God's people wouldn't break the Sabbath. And so their intent was good, but they had elevated these traditions of humanity, placed them on a level with God's truth and God's law, and it shaped their religious life and outlook. And these traditions over time took over. They pushed out the original intention, and it became about a list of requirements that you needed to meet or not meet in order to keep the Sabbath holy. It became about what you did rather than a gift to receive. It became about everything else built around the goodness of the Sabbath instead of the actual Sabbath. So what we see here is rules have replaced rest. Rules have replaced rest. Instead of the Sabbath being a gift to enjoy, it had become a crushing burden placed on people who were already worn out and weary. So let me ask you, on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being I'm thriving right now, I'm rested, I'm strong in my faith, in body and in soul, I'm a 5. Or 1, I'm exhausted. I'm worn out. I feel beat down. My faith is weak. My strength is weak. I'm barely keeping it together. I feel crushed under all the responsibilities and burdens that I have to carry. Where would you rate yourself right now? Like right now, what is the state of your soul? Are you operating in a place of rest, or are you operating in a place of performance? Now look down the road 5 years from now, based on where you are right now, and if nothing changes, do you like what you see? If you made no changes, I guess it's really good if you're at a 5, but if you're in the 1, 2 region, 3 region, and you track things down and you make no changes and you don't start pushing back against some of the things that have led you to this place, do you like what you see? Do you like where you end up? Is the pace that you're living at sustainable? And if it's not, Can I remind you that you don't have to end up in that place? Can I remind you that the gospel is a from this point on kind of gospel where we come to God, we say, we repent, we turn from the ways that we're living and we start walking in God's way, that from this point on, things can start to look different? And that the end can look different? If you are exhausted right now and you're just like weighed down by life, by worry, by stress, by the to-do list, by the pace, by the deadlines, by the full calendar, I just need to remind you that the burden can be light. It does not have to be this way. With God's help, you can change the ending if you start now. You are not destined to live under the cultural and religious burdens that have been placed on you. See, burdens are heavy to carry around, aren't they? Like if you have a burden, you understand something that's been placed upon you from your family of origin. Maybe your family was really great, but they said and did some things or had some practices in your life that actually laid burdens on you, and you're still carrying those burdens 30 years later. Burdens can come from a coach or a teacher or a moment or experience in your life where you were carrying that and you've been wearing that for so long and you've never shared it with anybody. And it's just this hidden burden that you just pick up every single day and carry like a 10-pound weight. Maybe 10 pounds is too light. 30 pounds, 50 pounds, 100 pounds, whatever you want to say. Burdens can come from expectations placed on you from your parents, from your friends, from your boss, from your coworkers. And the culture's burden that is placed on you is that your value is determined by what you produce. We like lionize someone who owns three companies and is just about to be the first world's first trillionaire because he sleeps 4 hours a day and he never stops working. Because we live in a culture that says your value is determined by what you produce, what you contribute, what you manufacture, what you create. You are rewarded for busyness. We wear it as a badge of honor, don't we? How are you doing? Well, I'm so busy. It's like, look at how important I am. The pressure to achieve, to live at a pace that is not sustainable, to always respond, to always improve, to always keep moving, because we're going to get celebrated and rewarded for being busy in our world means that we are living our lives with a burden. We have little to no margin. We're overstimulated. We're always plugged in. We have no idea what it looks like to shut off. And we're constantly running from one thing to the next, overstimulated and rarely still, and wearing it as a badge of honor because that's what the culture says we're supposed to do. And the end result is we're exhausted and carrying a burden that God never meant for us to carry. But it's not even just the cultural burdens or the personal burdens that you carry. It's also the religious ones placed on you by religious people. See, one of the biggest reasons Jesus always seemed to bump heads with the Pharisees was because they were the religious police. They loved to nitpick. They loved to stand on the rules, and they missed the heart and the intention of what God had given his people. And so it's so easy when faith gets turned into religious rules and the pressure to keep them. And when you live on the treadmill of religiosity and the need to perform so you always live up to the expectations of yourself or others or God, it's crushing. It's the endless life of striving. It's the endless life of striving. We can never do enough to live up to what God has said. And we're always going to have that off day where we fall short of our own expectations or the expectations of others. See, the cry of Christianity is not do more so you'll be loved. The cry of Christianity is it is finished. Done. Salvation is accomplished. Nothing needs to be added. Jesus paid for it on the cross. We live from a victory. We don't live to a victory. The cry of the Christianity is not do more and follow rules. It is finished. Jesus has paid your debt in full. He has risen from the grave, broken the power of sin and death. He now rules and reigns as creation's king. And you are invited to live a life from rest, not striving to get rest. Religious people have a hard time resting in the finished work of Jesus because it's all about rules. You are being invited today to rest in the finished work of Jesus, to receive it, not try to earn it or prove you deserve it or try to keep it with your efforts. See, when the life of faith becomes performance-based, it becomes exhausting. And when the religious rule keepers get active, it crushes people. They come here and they say, look, they're breaking the rules. And Jesus says, hey guys, you're missing the whole point. This is not the way of the kingdom. Jesus had strong words for the Pharisees. I love feisty Jesus. Jesus can throw a verbal haymaker, right? Jesus says, don't fall into the way of the religious people. Matthew 23, verse 1 to 4. It's a beautiful verse. It's powerful. Jesus says to his crowds and his disciples, the teachers of the law and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat, so you must be careful to do everything they tell you. So he's like, listen to their teaching. Like they are teaching. When they teach the law of God, they have authority. Listen to them. He's like, but do not do what they do. They don't practice what they preach. They tie up heavy, cumbersome loads and put them on other people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them. Come on, feisty Jesus. Why is he so mad? Well, he's mad because the religious people are hypocrites. They teach and say all the right things, but they don't practice it. And what they do is they place burdens and expectations on people who cannot, because of life, somehow are not living up to their expectations. They place burdens on them and they do nothing to lift the burden and care for them. That's why Jesus is so mad. Religious people lay burdens, but Jesus, my friends, comes to offer rest. Are you carrying a heavy burden today? You don't have to. The burden can be light. Look at how we can know the burden can be light. Jesus responds to their question with a story and a statement in verse 25 to 28. He starts with the story in verse 25 to 26. He tells a story about the most famous king in Israel's history, King David. And he tells a story about how David has been anointed king, but there was this period between when David was anointed, when he actually ascended to the throne, where he was an outlaw and he was being hunted by the king he was replacing. And during this time, he's in the wilderness and he's living in caves and he's scrounging for food and he's so hungry, and his companions, the people with him are so hungry. They go to the house of God, to the tabernacle, and they see the high priest and like, do you have any food for us? And the high priest has nothing but the 12 consecrated loaves of bread, which they would bake to represent the 12 loaves of Israel, fresh and put on the altar every Sabbath. And only the priest could eat it. What would you do if David and his companions came in and said, we're starving, we're being hunted? Well, this priest, guess what he does? He gives them the bread. He gives them the bread. And David distributes the bread to his men to eat. So here's why Jesus tells the story. Number one, Jesus is drawing a comparison between himself and his disciples and David and his companions. And saying that human need at times is going to supersede the rules and regulations. He's also saying that I am the son of David. I am the greater king that God promised to David. Remember, David had been given a promise that one of his ancestors was going to come, that he would be the Messiah, and that the Messiah would establish a never-ending kingdom and sit on a royal throne forever. Jesus is comparing himself to David and his companions and saying, I'm the greater David. I'm the Messiah. This is my new community. He's drawn a direct line between him being the king and being the Lord of the Sabbath. And this is how Jesus ends. He declares himself the Lord of the Sabbath and reminds us that we were created to receive the Sabbath as a gift from God. Look at what he says in verse 27. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. Jesus' point is that the Sabbath is a gift to receive from God. that God originally gave the Sabbath to his people in order to meet their needs. The Sabbath was not and never was meant to be about people meeting some requirements of what did or did not constitute work. God, from creation, built this into the rhythm of life to say, I know how humanity works best. They bear my image. I know how the world works best. You are not a machine. You need to rest like the one you are made in his image, right? So the Sabbath is to be a day of rest. It was to benefit humanity, not crush them. Jesus is saying, look, the Sabbath was never meant to be a heavy yoke, a heavy burden being placed on people. It was meant to lift the burden that was placed on them the other 6 days of the week. It was meant to help them flourish and thrive. This was God's intention, but it's become obscured by the lists of do's and don'ts. The problem, my friends, is not whether you practice the Sabbath or not. It's that there has been rules attached to it that cause you to miss the good gift that God is wanting to give you. And so Jesus is saying the Sabbath is a gift to receive and a rhythm to inhabit. I love what a pastor in New York says. He says, the life we long for is not something we discover or invent or declare to be true. The life we long for is something we receive. That is completely countercultural, is it not? The life you are looking for is something you receive from God through faith in Jesus. That God speaks over your life, it is finished, and you can find rest in that. But then God, in his mercy and grace, he gives us a day built into the rhythm of what it means to be human so that we can thrive, so we can rest, so we can delight in God, so we can worship him, so that we can enjoy the good world that he made. The Sabbath is much more than a day where you don't go to work. The Sabbath is a day to delight in God and the world around you. It's a day to celebrate and enjoy the good gifts that God has given. It's not a day to go out and get more. It's a day to celebrate what you have. A day, my friends, where there's no to-do list. Where your phone and all the notifications and emails and deadlines and demands of the week are put aside so that you can rest as a way to thrive in this world. So I'm going to give you permission this week. Set aside 24 hours and wear nothing but sweatpants. I'm serious. Like, as soon as I go home today, I'm taking off these clothes and I'm putting the sweatpants on and I'm having a nap. And I am going to spend time with my family and enjoy good food. And I'm going to celebrate that I don't have to work because Jesus died on a cross and has given me the opportunity to find rest in him. This week, I challenge you to take a 24-hour period where you wear sweatpants and you are productive at being unproductive. And if you can't do a full 24 hours, start with practicing mini Sabbaths and your day by taking 1 hour to be in the presence of God in stillness. Turn your phone off, put away the TV, spend 1 hour at the end of the day where you are just with God and you are enjoying him and delighting in him. Instead of sitting at a cubicle or at a lunch table and scrolling while you eat lunch, go for a walk and pray. Practice mini Sabbaths, start there. Do you want to thrive? Receive the gift of the Sabbath. And by doing so, you are actually declaring an act of trust and resistance. You are declaring that Jesus is Lord and I am not. The Son of Man is a title for Jesus. He's Lord, even of the Sabbath. Jesus' position as Lord of heaven and earth means he gets to define what it means to be human. Means he gets to define the rhythms that lead to flourishing. Sabbath is an act of trust that God is God and I am not, and he is in control, and the universe is going to work just fine if I take 24 hours off and I don't check my emails. It's also an act of resistance that, hey, my identity is not found in what I produce. It is found in what Jesus has done and what he says about me. It's an act of resistance that says, hey, I don't need to produce to be valuable. I get to live from rest, not for it. I get to receive my identity. And so the Sabbath is a posture and a practice to declare that Jesus is Lord and I am not. My friends, there is a way that leads to rest. Jesus called it the way of the easy yoke and the burden is light. Matthew 11, 28 to 30. Come to me, Jesus says, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Does that not sound like a beautiful way to live? I'm inviting you not to add more to your life, but to take more off and embrace the way of Jesus, which is the way of the easy yoke and the light burden. Jesus' invitation is come to me and find rest. It's a promise. I will give you rest. You will find rest for your souls. And today we get to have a reminder of that when we take communion. See, communion is a declaration, it's bread and juice, but it's we hold in our hands a reminder that Jesus has declared from the cross that it is finished, that you and I do not have to work for our salvation. We do not have to strive to keep what God has accomplished for us in Jesus, that we can find rest in Jesus and his finished work. It is a reminder of that, but it's also a reminder that Jesus is our true rest, that he is our true rest. And that when we practice the Sabbath and we take communion, it's also a reminder that one day Jesus is going to come back. He's going to set all things right, and you and I are going to enter into an eternal rest where we get to enjoy the presence of God in his perfect new heavens and new earth, where we can stop striving. And so as we take communion, remember, Jesus is your rest, both for your salvation and for today. And that when we practice that weekly Sabbath, we are declaring he is Lord. He runs the universe. It is finished. And one day it'll be finished in full.